Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members and testifiers and guests, please mute your mics as we continue with the conversation today. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at House Television Webcast. With that, members, the Committee Legislative Assistant, Mr. Badru, will now take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang. Vice Chair Zhang. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Daphne.
Daphne present.
Daphne present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Haley is excused. Juergens.
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun.
Present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson is excused. Zhang.
Present.
Zhang is present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Chair, we have a quorum.
Members, there's a quorum present. With that, Lead Hamilton, I'm sure you've reviewed the minutes for February 16, 2022. Do you want to move the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Lead Hamilton moves the approval of minutes for February 16, 2022. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? See none. The motion prevails and minutes for February 16, 2022 is now approved. With that, members, we do have three bills before us today. The first bill that we have is House File 3250. Chair Richardson, welcome to the committee. We'll move your bill, House File 3250, to be laid over for possible inclusion. Would that please present the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3250 seeks a $10 million appropriation for the Center for Economic Inclusion from the General Fund in fiscal year 2023. The bill would create a statewide funding opportunity for both workers and small businesses. This bill would provide the opportunity to increase access to support for dislocated and chronically underemployed people through nonprofits, and also increase access to capital for small businesses as well. We know that prior to the pandemic, many small businesses were facing challenges with workforce shortages. The pandemic has only served to increase those challenges, and a common trend we're hearing nationally and in Minnesota is that small business owners are feeling left behind and left out of COVID-related supports that overwhelmingly benefited larger businesses. In fact, one Goldman Sachs survey stated that 93% of small business owners feel like the policy priorities of big businesses are prioritized over small businesses. There's an urgent need to prioritize support for small businesses, and the Center for Economic Inclusion in Minnesota is uniquely situated to help. The center is the nation's first organization with an exclusive goal to advance inclusive economic growth to achieve regional prosperity. The center is focused on finding systemic solutions to eliminate racial gaps, and the center also relies on data-driven services, and this bill creates the opportunity to increase both our workforce and prioritize the small business issues that are facing barriers. With me today, I have Tawana Black, the founder and CEO of the Center for Economic Inclusion.
Thank you so much, Chair Richardson. With that, I wanted to welcome Ms. Tawana Black to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony, Ms. Black.
Thank you so much, Chair Noor, and members of the House Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Committee for hearing the Senate File 3250 and for the opportunity to testify today. The Center for Economic Inclusion is the nation's first organization created exclusively to work hand in hand with private sector businesses and government agencies to build an economy that works for everyone. by building racially inclusive and economically inclusive workplaces and organizations that are capable of contributing more successfully to build Minnesota's economy and to build and strengthen regional economies in measurable and meaningful ways, such that Minnesota's workers and business owners are included and prospering in equal and equitable ways. Last year alone, we helped more than 55 Minnesota public and private sector employers adopt data-informed policies and practices to strengthen their talent, procurement, philanthropy, public policy, and marketplace strategies to close racial wealth gaps and build a more inclusive and stronger economy. And more than 10,000 people engaged in our workshops and convenings, gaining the tools to contribute to building a more inclusive regional economy. We look to this committee to take proactive steps to advance policies, investments, and systemic actions that will build Minnesota's economy in inclusive ways where all Minnesota families, workers, and business owners are positioned to experience the prosperity that the state has been known for generations. The Center proposed this inclusive job growth bill in order to prosper this economy, and we believe that we'd like to elevate data that shows us just the way that we can do this. According to Brookings, there are 1,503 Black-owned businesses, accounting for 2%, only 2% of employer businesses in Minnesota. If those businesses accounted for 10% of Minnesota's employer firms, the equivalent of the population in just greater MSP, there would be over 7,000 of those businesses in just the metro area alone. These firms today contribute to 18 jobs per firm, compared to just 24 firms' jobs for all businesses. And if we had parity in that job creation in Minnesota's economy, that would equal more than 9,000 more jobs in our economy, and parity in wages would bring more than $900 million into Minnesota's economy. Those are dollars that we all need in this economy today, and these strategies included in our fund would help us to do that by investing in both worker development and in business development, and investing in the promising practices and proven practices that exist in communities of color, hand in hand with the employers and government agencies that the center works with every day to build inclusive and equitable strategies. The Inclusive Job Growth Fund is designed to stimulate inclusive and economic growth through strategic, data-informed investments in racially responsive job creation strategies in Minnesota. The fund stands on two pillars. First, we will create and stimulate job creation and more inclusive workplaces through pay-for-performance contracts with nonprofit organizations that provide worker and employer outreach, training, support services, housing, transportation, and job placement services. The second pillar is to help business investments, to invest in business development and expansion of community development through three investment products: forgivable loans, revenue-based financing, and equity-based investments that are going to stimulate the economy alongside many of the investments already occurring in our community, but that are not doing enough in order to scale and grow those businesses that corporate organizations are positioned to do business with in order to stimulate inclusive economic growth. With this fund, we will not only build on our success over several years investing in Minnesota's nonprofits through this pay-for-performance model, but we'll also scale our results and close racial employment gaps and wealth gaps by broadening that work by investing in proven and promising practices in both businesses and community-based organizations to strengthen our economy for all Minnesotans. Collectively, we have an opportunity to improve and grow our community and our economy, and we thank you for this opportunity and your consideration of this opportunity to build together.
Thank you, Ms. Black, for your testimony. Don't know, Chair Richardson, is there any other testify? I only have Ms. Black.
That's the only testifier today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Members, discussion as we discuss the Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Black, thank you for your testimony. I see on your website you have a number of other entities that contribute dollars. Am I reading this correctly? Are you currently at about a $3 million annual budget? Is that accurate?
That was accurate about a year and a half ago. I appreciate that question. That was accurate about a year and a half ago. This year's budget is closer to $8 million, and last year's budget was just under $6 million.
Okay, Ms. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Chairman. And Ms. Black, you talked about funds going to other nonprofits to help with, funding their initiatives. How do you measure outcomes so that you know your dollars are being used in a way that you expect the other nonprofits to use those dollars?
Ms. Black.
Thank you so much for that question. Great question. We use a number of metrics, and we've done this with the appropriation that the Center for Economic Inclusion has held for workforce development over a number of years. We use a pay-for-performance model where we actually contract directly with nonprofit organizations in that case, but we use a similar model with other initiatives and with loan investments. We actually operate this with corporate dollars right now, where we make a direct investment with a forgivable loan product. You might have seen on our website a most recent $5 million investment from JP Morgan Chase that we'll use for revenue-based financing, equity investments and forgivable loans in a similar way that we propose with this fund. But in that case, we establish metrics that are everything from how many people might be recruited into a program, how long it takes for people to be recruited into the program before they're placed and placed into training, what types of support services individuals are going to receive, both quantitative and qualitative measures that we assess through focus groups and surveys from participants in those programs, as well as the employers, then how people matriculate through those programs, and then a post assessment based on not just are people getting through training and into employment, because our appropriation previously for North at Work, and actually currently we still have that, we've been in it for about 7 years, has been not just about people getting trained, but these are individuals who have actually been trained 4 or 5 times off of state and county appropriation dollars or competitive grant dollars and are still unemployed. So we're serving the chronically employed through that pay for performance program. So we're measuring the level of intensity of those services and what it takes to keep people employed 1 and 2 years after. And we've set up our pay for performance such that there are milestones of percentages of payment in order to ensure that the organizations can still thrive. They can still stay funded and keep their staff, because that's important, but that there are milestone payments such that as individuals matriculate through that program and meet their milestone successes. And we establish that model with input from both employers and from job seekers, and from job seekers as we designed it. And we'll design and are designing our business development process in the same way, such that not just the investments we make to businesses, but the way that we work with employers and the corporate side is designed the exact same way. The way that we invest our services, we get paid by corporations and by government agencies, state, county, and local engagements. And it's designed in the same way, such that they're making milestones based on the level of investment and time and talent that we invest in them.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman.
And Leader Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Black, my final question is, I represent a very, very rural area, southwestern Minnesota. And with that said, a lot of people don't realize how diverse the community that I serve is, the area that I serve is. In fact, the largest city is Worthington. And if you attend the school down there, if you tour the school, go through the elementary school, over 80% of the students are students of color, and it's beautiful, right? The whole area is changing, and it's beautiful. And so my question as a rural member is, are you working with any entities in greater Minnesota, and or are we able to bridge that gap so your services can help influence people all across the state?
Thank you so much for that. Oh, apologies.
Oh, go ahead, Ms. Black.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Ternor. I am so excited for these questions. I'm just jumping in. I appreciate that question. We are. So the center, we have engagements all across the state of Minnesota, from St. Louis County to St. Cloud and here clearly in the state, our greater MSP area. We don't have engagements yet in your part of the state. However, we'd be engaged and excited to be able to engage there. For this particular fund, we've identified a number of communities, and yet we're certainly open to adding and or changing those communities based on demand and interest of different parts of the state, and recognize the need for, as you've stated here, there are parts of the state that continue to diversify and have a need for both services and investments in order to be sure that the workforce is able to be employed and that employers are able to meet the needs of that workforce and changing business community.
And Mr. Chairman, just one final thing. Thank you. Ms. Black, let's make that happen. I'm more than happy to introduce you to people out in my neck of the woods, if you will. And so let's make that happen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lynn Hamilton. I see Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Richardson, for the bill. Thank you, Ms. Black, for your testimony. I'm going to start by saying I guess I'm a little disappointed that we don't have anybody on testifying that's been helped by this organization, whether it's a person that has obtained a job or a business that has been able to grow. I guess in the future, when we have bills like this, I would like to see or hear from those types of people that have actually benefited from these state dollars or organizational dollars that are going out into our communities. My question would be for Ms. Black, how many jobs can you actually say that your organization has provided or grown within the state of Minnesota?
Ms. Black.
Thank you so much for that question and for that recommendation regarding our testimony. I'll be sure that we do that and can provide previous testimony that's been given regarding our appropriations in the past. I do not have our current most recent report in front of me, so I can't don't hold me to a precise number, but I would say over the last sets of appropriations, I think that number is just under 400 on the workforce development side. And that is, again, one step removed because our job is to invest in the pay for performance models and workforce development. And we are just entering the business development side. Our core mission is about helping businesses, corporations, large employers, and large government agencies. We have been one step removed on the workforce development side and business development side, and we're entering this part of the business more deeply, really on the demands and needs of the corporate community and large government agencies who have been unable to meet their procurement demands and their workforce demands, save an entity like ours, going deeper into this space in the state because of the lack of investment and the lack of capacity of our state's ability to see these types of businesses and workers grow at scale.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question, Mr. Chair. We talked, Ms. Black, you talked about a two-pronged approach here, the pay for performance and the business investments. Of this $10 million, how much will be going for the pay for performance? How much will be going towards business investments? And are we talking this is more of a redistribution to other nonprofits or and or businesses? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Black.
Thank you for that question. Some of that in terms of the distribution in terms of how much will go into each is yet to be determined as this moves through appropriations. That said, it is a redistribution. So it is us operating the pay for performance on the workforce development side. So then funds are operating through that system and then contracted directly with community-based organizations. On the business development side, it is us investing directly in businesses owned by Black, Indigenous, Asian, and Latino people. And in that equity investment, revenue-based financing, or forgivable loans, that is us directly investing in the businesses, not investing in an intermediary who is then investing in those businesses. And that's a loan fund that we have been operating for the last 2 years in small scale and just announced in the last few weeks. You might have seen that in the news. If not, we could happily share that. Just announced a major scaling of that just in the last 2 to 3 weeks.
President Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. I don't know if Chair Richardson could help with this one or Ms. Black, but if I could get a list of all the organizations and businesses that they partner with, that would be nice to know since I'm right here in the Twin Cities and how we can connect the dots here to make sure that we know where to send people for potential resources or help within this area. So that's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure you will be receiving that information because it's the work that Ms. Black has been doing. So, Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Baker, sorry.
No, that's okay. No worries. And thank you for that presentation. I had not really understood, Ms. Black, kind of what the organization did. Maybe my question might be for Representative Richardson is why $10 million? That's Basically almost double of the last budget. I know they had a little bit of a bigger one before last year. They get a lot of foundational support. So what we've seen recently, and this isn't just for this organization, it's for others, but we as lawmakers are all under scrutiny now to make sure that when we start using third parties or hiring other vendors to do things, we have to do a good job with background checks. You obviously, we've all know our issues have come up recently in news articles about feeding programs that have fallen on questionable things. Does your bill address making sure that any organization is going to be vetted properly? How do you want to handle the background checks so that, you know, they're efficient, they're getting to the right people, but how are you going to be addressing that? So it's kind of that vetting process, if I can ask that, and maybe go back to Ms. Black. And then also, why 10 million? Why such a large jump? Because some organizations, that's a enormous leap in a quick movement. So I'm kind of curious your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Chair Richardson or Ms. Black?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can start and happy to have Ms. Black respond as well. In terms of the amount, I think it really speaks to the urgency of the situation. And it speaks to the fact that investments like these are long overdue. In 2020, Citi released a report that was looking at, you know, the costs of systemic racism on business for the last 20 years within the United States. And they looked at just one area within the African-American community. And they found that the US economy lost more than $16 trillion as a result of racism directed just at the African-American community. So this $10 million is really a drop in the bucket in terms of the missed opportunity that we're seeing not only as a nation, but as a state as well. And if you're interested in the numbers on the state, there is an economist here in Minnesota that spoke at our House Select Committee on Racial Justice, Dr. Bruce Corey, who has pulled together those numbers, not only for the state of Minnesota, but has gone district by district to talk about what that lost opportunity looks at, and not just within the metro, but across rural communities as well. And so when I'm looking at this number, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the lost opportunity that we've experienced for decades here in Minnesota. And as it relates to the vetting pieces for any pass-through grant funds that are going to go to an organization, there are specific requirements that are required as part of RFP and bidding processes. So the center would be held to the same standards that the state is held to when they are doing an RFP or if they are doing a request for bids as well. And all of the obligations that would confer down to the center would also then pass through to other organizations who would be funded through these funds.
Representative Beck.
Yeah, thank you for that, Representative Richardson. And again, as the testimony shared too, they want to reach more of a statewide effort. Do you see, in your mind as a chief author, areas in the state that you want to make sure we touch? Is there certain communities that you can think of that you think this would be well suited for?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker, for your question. Well, I was really excited when Representative Hamilton was talking about Worthington. I had the opportunity to visit his community with Chair Dabney as well. That was one of the first trips that I had an opportunity to take part in as a new legislator. And I love the energy there and that both he and Ms. Black are planning to connect, because I think that that is a perfect opportunity. Ms. Black talked about the connections that they have within St. Cloud. The goal within this bill, as it's set forth, is to really ensure that there is a statewide impact and that there is work done across the community. And so, as Ms. Black said, where there is need, they are committed to doing this work. And we know that this $10 million investment, as I said before, is just a drop in the bucket, but the hopes would be that this could create a pathway to ensuring that there's more funding to ensure that we're able to reach more communities across the state.
Representative Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, that's all that I have. I just, $10 million is much more than a drop in the bucket for me. I want to make sure we really talk about this carefully. I want to help people for sure, but it's a lot of money. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Representative Juggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Richardson kind of touched on what my question was when I raised my hand, so I'll change it a little bit. Initially when I raised my hand, I wanted to ask about accountability. How will we know how this money is being tracked? And there's nothing in the bill language that explains that tracking process. And Representative Richardson, you touched on that a little bit. So I'll change my question. I guess my question is this: how will we in the legislature know if this is successful? What information are we gonna get 2 years from now that says, We invested $10 million and these are the results that we got for it? That's what I don't see that in here and didn't really get that from your earlier explanation. I wonder if either Representative Richardson or Ms. Black, if you could help me with that, please.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Juergens, for your questions. So reports will be going back to the departments. I mean, those are requirements that come down with any contract that would come through the state. If there is a desire to have a report back to this committee directly, I'm sure that Ms. Black and the center would be happy to accommodate that request. But just in terms of the requirements that come down with contracts, it is always a requirement that there are reports going back to the department on how funds are spent and in terms of any invoices that are paid.
Representative Young.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson. That's my only question. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I know Ms. Black has explained. She's been doing a fabulous job in terms of the economic inclusion. I just wanted to ask if Chair Richardson or Ms. Black wanted to give closing comments before we move to the next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to take this opportunity to thank Ms. Black for her testimony today. Thank the members as well for the great discussion, and to just leave you with the final words that this is an opportunity for us to begin to move in the right direction to close racial economic gaps within the state. And this is a step in the direction of ensuring that Minnesota can be as prosperous as a state as it has the opportunity to be. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. With that, I renew my motion. House File 3250 be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, we're moving to the next bill, which is House File 3342. I wanted to welcome Representative Jordan to the committee. I move House File 3342 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Jordan, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm excited to present House File 3342, a bill to provide $1 million to fund workforce projects at Eastside Neighborhood Services. Half of that would be used for the Senior Community Service Employment Program, and the other half would be used to fund the Nursing Assistance Plus Program to expand their CNA training program. For background, Eastside Neighborhood Services is a nonprofit in the Sheridan neighborhood of my district that has served our community for over 100 years. They work to break down economic and social barriers for people of all ages. In addition to the programs I'll be discussing today, Eastside Neighborhood Services runs a daycare, serves as the site for an alternative high school, maintains a food bank, develops programs for seniors, and so much more. They genuinely touch everyone in my district, and their reach extends to yours as well. The two programs today are critical to addressing workforce needs. The Senior Community Service Employment Program provides training and resources for seniors over the age of 55. It emphasizes job searching and transition support. Their Nursing Assistance Plus program trains people in certified nursing assistance positions. Both address gaps and needs in our workforce. I have with us today Christine Martin, who serves as the president of Eastside Neighborhood Services, and Barbara Freeman. She serves as the program facilitator for the Senior Community Service Program. They can go into more details about these fundings, the funding needs, and their community impact associated with these programs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Jordan. Ms. Martin, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Christine Martin, and I'm the president of Eastside Neighborhood Services. Thank you for hearing this bill today. And thank you, Representative Jordan, for authoring and carrying this bill forward. As a very old nonprofit, 107 years to be exact, Eastside Neighborhood Services has strategically and collaboratively worked to build strong communities and local economies by targeting the barriers that face individuals in doing so. However, we always engage people in developing the solutions. And you're going to hear more about that in the next few minutes. As Representative Jordan said, we do support an ecosystem of intergenerational programs. And through all of them, we focus on individual strengths, their social networks, developing skills, and most of all, promoting independent thinking. Today, our workforce development programs are evolving to specifically solve for gaps in the individual's ecosystem, as well as gaps in the economic ecosystem that surrounds us. We started the certified nursing assistant pathway about 4 years ago. Demand was high, supply was low and is low, and tragically, it's an industry that has a super high turnover. We worked with the city of Minneapolis to receive our first funding. In this funding, we provide program management and we make the placements. But the bulk of the money goes to the local technical colleges who provide the training. Our model includes building social capital and peer networks, which is a little different in the industry of career development. And we work specifically with local hospitals, nursing care facilities, home care agencies, who then hire our participants. Before COVID, we averaged around 40 to 50 students, particularly in the last year before COVID. As COVID raged through the nation, the need for medical staff of all skills grew rapidly, and none of us could miss that. Our ability to recruit, convene, and provide the space for learning together was soon suspended, and the technical colleges also had to shift to virtual training, and soon the demand for slots for students became very competitive, all barriers we never foresaw when we opened this program. But we are solution focused and we listen to our participants. And the solution that we have before you, and that is that would be funded through this bill, it was informed by our clients. And the first part is to meet the extreme needs and the current demand for new professionals in the medical field through the provision of entry-level training beyond CNA. We've heard demand for phlebotomy, end-of-life care, peer recovery specialists, and medical assistants. Two, bring the CNA and all these trainings I just mentioned in-house, where we can control for the variables like we experienced with the local colleges. Second, to increase the trust that people have in Eastside and the kind of learning that they experience while they're in our program, once again, with the values that I mentioned earlier. And finally, to expand the number of people that we serve. If we're not transporting people, if we're not providing transportation to the outside facilities, we believe we could actually serve more, so hopefully increasing the numbers by 50%. And then finally, what we've also learned is that alumni come back. They come back to us because we helped them the first time. And we aren't supported for that through fiscal resources. It's done because it's the right thing to do. But we'd like to really create an alumni engagement and continued medical training, continued career training, et cetera. The other reason people come back is that they faced a crisis. They've lost their housing or they've lost their transportation or they've had children. And we, because we're such a well-rounded organization, we'd like to be able to serve them more broadly in that way. So that is the first part of this bill. I'm going to move on to the second part, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the Senior Community Employment Services Program that Representative Jordan talked about. So I'll shift slightly here. We all know that the current data on the economy, that there are more job openings than there are applicants, and businesses are closing all over the place because they can't find employees. But data also suggests that there are more older people in our economic system and in our state who are retiring, and there are less younger people entering the workforce. We can tell you today that we know a lot of older people, particularly low-income older people, who are very interested in staying in the workplace, but need a little help. And this is a gap for which we have a partial solution. For 15 years, we've managed the Senior Community Service Employment Program, which is a federally funded Department of Labor subsidized employment program for low-income, 55 and older adults. Every year we serve about 220 older adults in Hennepin County. They are screened, traced, and placed in subsidized employment at local nonprofits and government agencies. We are the largest provider in Minnesota. We creatively work with each participant as they prepare to return to work. During their senior college month, they learn about current technology, how to do payroll, how to enter in data. They also learn about the changing workplace cultures and how things have shifted on them since the last time that they worked. Finally, they learn about needed social skills, perhaps a light touch on workplace engagement skills, building resumes, and building relationships with each other. The ultimate goal for this program is to transition to unsubsidized employment within 4 years. Our success rates are only 40%. It's not because older adults don't want to stay in the workforce, but they face what we are all commonly coming to understand is the benefits cliff by also being an older adult dependent on the system. So we've begun working on that. Expanded support from you would allow us to hire transition navigators and job coaches. One will help with the transition piece from subsidized to non-subsidized, and the other is to help them better understand that you don't just have to stay at one job if you have more interest in expanding your career and your opportunities, but really to understand the power of being empowered in your job to make choices for yourself. We will also be able to serve more participants with these resources while addressing those transition barriers. The benefits cliff that I'm talking about is that when older adults who are low income or who are on subsidized employment begin to earn more than their particular benefit that they're receiving from state or federal, that then those benefits fall off. And so the earned income in your new position is good, and it's solid, but it won't necessarily cover the Section 8 housing that you had or the medical care that you had. And so we want to work with these older adults to understand and be prepared for the transition challenges and the benefits that might be challenged, and to work collaterally and collegially with other organizations on remediation. We will call this a wraparound transition model, using resources from inside, eastside, as well as outside. Let me tell you, it is a beautiful experience to see a group of women and men, diverse, speaking all languages, older than 55, and super excited while they learn about entering their hours in Paycom, how to engage with a supervisor who is 40 years younger than them, where to buy work clothes, and whether or not I carry a briefcase or not. They can navigate their own health needs, and they afford daycare for their grandchildren. And they express feeling extreme engagement and responsibility in their communities. I don't think we can afford to not have this this group of our community in the workplace if they want to be in the workplace. So Enough of what I would say to you as the leader of the organization. I've invited Barbara Freeman, who is a participant in the CSEP program, and she is in her last year of employment, actually with our agency. If you wouldn't mind, Chair Nora, I'll just refer to her.
Ms. Freeman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the House. My name is Barbara Freeman. I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. I come from a place called Robert Taylor Projects. I'm from a family of 17 siblings. I am the mother of 7 children, 23 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren. I was working for the DAP program, Domestic Abuse Project, for 16 years until a new CEO came aboard and let all of us in our different offices go. That was January the 17th, 2016. I started searching for jobs everywhere. Been turned down job after job. 2 years I searched until my daughter told me about Eastside Neighborhood Services. I had given up, but I knew that I needed to work to survive. So I signed up and got into the training program October the 2nd, 2018. We were given 4 years of training. This would be my last year in the CSEP program. I started training as a front desk receptionist, then advanced to program assistant. I'm now with the Vital Living Program, helping the elderly. We have programs such as A Matter of Balance, Chronic Conditions and Chronic Pain, Caregiver Support Group, and other programs. I was given the chance to have my own program, and I named it Treasury Memories, a place where any senior, male or female, can come for 1 hour and speak on different topics, whether sad or happy. Without the CSEP program, people will be lost or forgotten, and that is not a good feeling. I was 68 when I came into the program. I could not find a job anywhere and had the experience. They did not have to say that I was too old. It was the look on their faces or the lies they told when they said that you overqualified. There is no such thing as you overqualified when you've done this job before. CSEP gave me another chance and let me know that we are still useful. We need this program. It lets us know that there is still a place for the elderly in this world, and that we are not rejected and throwaways after 55 years old. I'm like so many other seniors that do not want to retire or sit back and sit around and wait for death. Remember that we all are getting older. The elderly is one of the most loyal and dedicated workers in the workforce. Please support our acts because there are many other adults who want to contribute to our state's workforce. I leave you with this. We are not seniors. We are seasoned elders. And I thank you all.
Thank you so much, Ms. Freeman, for sharing your story and encouraging us to keep on the work and working with everybody. We know that we lack 2.8% of the labor force for many people who left the workforce. And that includes senior workers. So thank you so much for your testimony. I see Lead Hamilton with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Freeman, my question is, are you able to provide your services to everyone who needs them? Is there enough of you to go around? Does that make sense? Are you able to provide services to everybody that comes through the door, or is there a greater need out there and we're not able to meet all those in need?
There is a greater need out there. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
There is a greater need out there, but I think Ms. Martin would be better equipped to answer that question than I.
Ms. Martin.
Thank you, Chair Knorr, Representative Representative Hamilton. The Senior Services Program is available throughout the state of Minnesota. There are 7 providers. We just happen to be the largest provider because we have the most need and we have the highest population of older adults. We do turn people away. They get on a wait list. They have to come back every 6 months. But because it's a means-tested program, they have to meet certain variables of income, assets, et cetera. There are certain people who get ruled out because they aren't poor enough or needy enough, but we do have waiting lists every single year, yes.
And Mr. Chairman.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Freeman, thank you for sharing your story. I can only imagine how stressful it can be to be in that situation. And so I really appreciate you sharing that. My question would be, how do people know how do you get the word out so people know who you are, that you exist, and the services that you provide?
Ms. Mutt.
Yes, thank you, Chair Knorr and Representative Hamilton. We do advertising. We advertise, obviously, through our website. We advertise in older adult magazines or if there's local newspapers. But I'm telling you, the best word of mouth is a happy participant. And I was talking to Chairman Knorr a couple of weeks ago, and there are many people in our program who come from communities that Mr. Chairman Knorr represents, and they are eagerly passing both the access and introducing their friends and colleagues to Eastside Neighborhood Services.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, final question.
Go ahead, Lynn Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My final question is, if for when these dollars are received, how many more people would be served by these additional funds, an estimate? Maybe you said that and I just missed it.
Thank you for the question, Chairman Knorr, Representative Hamilton. We serve approximately 220 a year. Before COVID, it slowed down somewhat after the beginning of COVID. We hope to be able to increase because we're adding a few pieces to the transition side. That's not going to add new clients, but on the front end, the Navigator, we're hoping to increase by 75 to 100. We only have 1.25 staff who do all of this work. We have a very, very low staff ratio, but we rely on people like Barbara who get either placed in a certain program or get placed in the CSEP program to do a lot of the logistical work. So I did not mention that the income, the salaries of the individuals is whatever the going rate in Hennepin County. So it's a minimum of $15 an hour.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill. These are definitely two areas of need within our economy and for these two programs. My question is for Ms. Martin. I'm a little unclear on the CNA program. What are your plans to grow it? My question is because now we all need to know that there is a definite need for CNAs right now. I dare to use the word, in a crisis. So you partner with the technical colleges. Do you provide the space or the instruction or tuition help, or how does your organization fit into that model of providing or expanding, getting more people to become CNAs?
Thank you for the question. Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair and Representative Frankie. Currently, We provide the case management. We do recruitment, case management, and placement for the CNAs. But in the case management, we do a lot around understanding careers, understanding yourself in the industry of medical, the medical field. So a lot of both psychological and social stabilization around just the medical field in and of itself. And then we contract with technical colleges, such as MTC or St. Paul College, to actually do the hands-on medical training. Our proposal includes bringing that training in-house, hiring a specialist, building out the training units in our facility along with certification. We have to go through that process for certification. What we've seen, and we've done this with some of our other pathways of employment that we work on for building career, building careers in the trades, that if you can bring as much of that in-house, you can control for the variables. For example, we have not had a cohort of people in MTC for months and months and months because we can't get our people in. There have been other priorities for using Governor Walz's move for highlighting CNA has taken up a lot of the slots. There are others who have taken up the slots. And so our really interested low-income people have been waiting patiently. So I think we do have one on the docket for March. So our idea is to bring that in-house and then buy for long-term utilization the equipment that we need to have. We have a very large space in Northeast. Our building would provide that capacity. And what we couldn't build or bring into the building, we would contract out for services in the building. Thank you.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Martin. That does explain a lot. And I would just like to end with thanking Ms. Freeman for coming forward and sharing her story. As I stated on the previous bill, it's just so much more to hear from actual people that are affected and that we're able to help by providing these funds. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan.
Thank you so much to Ms. Martin, Ms. Freeman, and Representative Jordan for bringing the bill forward. The Senior Community Service Employment Program, as you've had, is one of the programs that is offered through DEED, and portion of it is funded through federal program. Look forward to hearing more about it for those who are interested. This is a unique program within our system that allows older workers age 55 and above to get back to the workforce, and hopefully we can highlight the benefits of that program for those who need it. And Representative Jordan, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for listening and your great questions. But I especially want to thank Eastside Neighborhood Services for the impact you make in my community and with my constituents. Thank you.
With that, thank you, Representative Jordan. I renew my motion, House File 3342, be laid over for possible inclusion. We move to the next bill, that is Vice Chair Jay Zhong, please move the bill and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the House File 3226 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File, thank you. Again, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3226 is a bill for the African Economic Development Solution, an organization that has been around since 2008, providing service in a variety of forms to African immigrants who seek to start a business or grow their business, including one-on-one coaching, loans, and technical assistance. This organization estimates that around 3,000 African immigrants own small businesses in Minnesota. This bill seeks $3 million for a revolving loan fund to help entrepreneurs in the African immigrant community. I have a few testifiers here today to speak on this bill. First is Mr. Gene Gagugu, the president of the organization with two business owners who have been helped by AETS.
Mr. Galgalu, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Noor, Lead Hamilton, and a member of the committee. My name is Jean Galgalu, founder, president, and CEO at African Economic Development Solutions, AEDS, a nonprofit organization that serves African immigrants in Minnesota. I'm here to testify on our bill. With me, there are three testifiers who will share their experience with AEDS and their challenges and opportunities. Also, I want to thank Representative Jiang for his dedication, leadership, and support to African immigrants in Minnesota. AEDS provide business development training. It's a 12-week training program for startup or expanding businesses. Technical assistance, where we make a big impact because of the cultural specific technical assistance program. Lending, financial literacy, home ownership education, workforce development, and credit placemaking, which is the intersection of art and culture for economic development strategy. In 2021, we served 966 clients that include throughout all of our programs. Of that, 77 were through home ownership program, and 55 were through our training, business development training program. Last year, in 2021, we processed $2.4 million in loan and grant to African immigrant businesses and brought resources to our communities. Why do we need this capital? Dr. Corey, Bruce Corey, who is a vice chair of Concordia University, did a market study, African market study. It was funded by McKnight Foundation. The finding was nearly 67% of African immigrants lack accessing financing for their business. This has been a critical challenge for African immigrants, either when they start their own business or they expand their businesses. With that level of challenge, it's impossible to have wealth building within our communities. There are other challenges that African immigrants face, such as marketing, financial licensing, and business training. Our proposal is to $3 million for lending, for loan to African immigrant. We will leverage this fund to increase available funding to small businesses. This loan will provide between 60 to 80 businesses. We expect this to create or retain about 240 to 300 jobs. We expect to grow this loan fund in 5 years to $10 million and to provide over 200 businesses in 5 years. Now I will pass to Dr. Abe Dalu to our next testifier.
Dr. Dalu, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jean. Honorable Muhammad Noor, chair of the committee, members of the committee also, I thank you to begin with for your tireless service to the state of Minnesota. We really appreciate that. And also thank you for providing this opportunity to testify on behalf of African Economic Development Solution, or which I will be referring as AEDS going forward. My name is Abe Dalu. I'm the former owner of ANA Reliable Home Health Care, and I'm also the current board member of ADS. Therefore, I'm speaking with a great degree of knowledge about ADS. Just let me go back and remind you, I'm sure you'll hear Dr. Corey's publication or articles over and over through different presenters. It's for this committee, it's very important to understand that Minnesota's African immigrants come from about 25 of Africa's 54 countries. But many times or very often, the mainstream institutions and political outreach are not reaching them effectively, even though I feel with time it's improving a great deal. So in his publication, Mr. Corey published, this is very helpful in order to have appreciation of the African-owned, African immigrant-owned businesses. In the Pioneer Press, March 2012, Mr. Corey stated that 14 African cultural groups and businesses represent in compiling his study. And in his studies, he indicates that about 12,000 businesses are owned by Black Americans and also African immigrants. And out of the 12,000 businesses that are in Minnesota, about 3,200 are owned by African immigrants. Therefore, it's very clear from here to note that African immigrants are striving to do their best to contribute to the economy of the state and also to be self-sufficient, also creating job and also providing the various services that the state needs. And today I'm here to testify on behalf of ADS for the fund that it's needing, the $3 million to build revolving loan fund, which is critically needed. And during this time, well, if you just go a step back a little bit and see us already, the president and the CEO of ADS indicated ADS was, it's from its inception in 2008 to date. They have done a phenomenal job in supporting African immigrant-owned businesses by providing training, one-on-one coaching, and obviously lending to certain degrees. So it has done a notable job, especially during the coronavirus pandemic. As you know, many businesses had to quit because of the hardship that was brought on them by the corona pandemic. And also during the 2020 public riot in Twin Cities, again, many businesses were impacted. And during this time, ADES did a tremendous job in saving many businesses so that they can stay in business by providing the loans from the limited funds they have. And so forth. And it's really to say very straightforward, ADS requires even more funds for African immigrants owned businesses so that they can expand the businesses or they can start. And as I said, Dr. Corey published a lot of articles there that African immigrants are doing a tremendous job in adding to the vibrant of the economy in the state of Minnesota. So the question becomes then to you know, everyone in the committee, why ADS? Why provide this loan through ADS? And I just offer three or four reasons why ADS is the right agency to support the African immigrants-owned businesses so that Minnesota becomes even a stronger state than ever before, economically and socially, culturally, and everything. Number one, ADS has a track record. Since 2008, it has built a track record to show that it can effectively work with the African immigrant-owned businesses. And Jean Galgalou has already mentioned they have supported about 966 businesses over the years. And he can give you more statistics on that. And secondly, aid us understand the diversity of the Twin Cities, the diversity within the larger Minnesota. And understanding that diversity is very important for us to build a greater Minnesota. Therefore, everybody should be embraced as a valuable member of the community. And third, they understand the culture of this diversity. They understand the culture of the greater Minnesota. And as I said, people, immigrants came from about 25 countries of Africa, of 54 African countries. And the last but not the least, AIDS also understand or have the staff that understand the language spoken by most of these African immigrant-owned businesses. And because of this, I recommend that this fund is granted to AIDS so that they can do even a much greater work than even before. And I thank you for providing this opportunity to AIDS and for your consideration to provide this fund to the agency. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, the committee members.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dalu. I see Washington as the next testifier on this bill. Vice Zhong, do we have the next testifier?
Mr. Gogu, do you have anyone else?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Idris Mohammed.
Mr. Mohammed, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Noor. And members of the committee. My name is Idris Mohammed, and I am the Director of Business Development, Workforce, and Housing. I've been working with AIDS for the last 4.5 years, and even before that as an independent contractor. I would like to start with our mission is to build wealth within African immigrant communities in Minnesota. By building wealth, what we are referring to in our mission is actually how to get access, how to give them access to capital for immigrants who really want to start business or who want to expand business. I was actually on the other side before I joined AIDS. I owned actually, I was a shareholder in an adult daycare and also a medical supply company. So I can feel the issue personally. Now that I am working, I am on the other side. We actually provide entrepreneurship and business development training to African immigrants who actually are interested to start business. And most of them, the ones that actually take the training, they are really looking for loan. And that's the way to actually give them access to capital. And without capital, actually, it's really almost next to impossible to start business or expand your business. We provide technical assistance, one-on-one on business consultancy, and that one-on-one on financial counseling. We also have actually the business consultancy part of it is we help them with marketing. We help them with bookkeeping and basic accounting. All these is to make them ready for the how to start their own businesses. And I would like to refer to an article written by Mr. Coco Doko, who is Project Director of Community Development and Engagement, the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. He actually says that, refers to African immigrants in Minnesota. They actually earned $2.5 billion in earnings during 2015. Those households paid $419 million in federal taxes and $222 million in state and local taxes, leaving African immigrants an estimated $1.8 billion in spending power. That actually tells you how hardworking these African immigrants are. But the obstacle for them to actually have their own business and run their own business is actually a lack of access to capital. So that, with that, I would like to say we really need the $3 million to actually help African immigrants get these loans and start their own business or expand their businesses and also create jobs. I don't know if I'm running out of time. The helping an entrepreneur, African immigrant entrepreneur start business is not only for that individual. It has a multiplier effect, but it will help the family. It will generate income. It will actually create jobs. So with that, I would like to say, yes, we really need the $3 million. And thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mohammed. I see Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Mr. Gelgulu, great to see you. My friend, Gene, I've always enjoyed working with you over the years. Great to see you. Mr. Dalu, you've talked about Dr. Corey. I've worked with him a number of years as well. I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Corey, and I appreciate you referring back to many of his papers or research as well. An individual that I have a great deal of respect. I'm not sure who this question would be directed to. Maybe Mr. Mohammed. When you talk about having dollars available, I believe you're wanting to set this up like a revolving loan fund. You have it set up similar to a revolving loan fund. And it reminds me, I used to chair the Agriculture Committee, and we had what was called the Rural Finance Authority, and it was a revolving loan fund where farmers could access those dollars and help leverage traditional forms of lending, take those dollars that they received from the RFA and secure more monies from a traditional bank. And it was very, very successful. So they're able to have access to more capital by having this program in place. So my question is, would this be similar in nature, or is it similar in nature, where you can use these funds to access additional capital through lenders, through the banks, and what has been the success rate in doing so?
I think that question...
Mr. Mohammed.
Sorry. Thank you. Actually, this question is... Jingle Guru is more equipped than me, so... I will transfer it to him.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Noor and Lead Hamilton. It's always a pleasure to see you, and the support you have been providing to our communities is tremendous. Let me take you why we really need a loan fund. In 2013, we had a credit building loan that to support, help businesses to create more credit for their businesses. And so we had Dilla Ethiopia restaurant located in Cedar Riverside. She won a small loan for handicap access a bathroom and for exit door required per liquor license, which we helped her to start the business in 2012, in June 2012. And we didn't have a loan. The maximum loan money fund that we had was $5,000 for credit building. And I asked my donor, which is Nexus Community Partner, asked if I can repurpose that loan so I can use it for loan purpose. And they told me, yes. What I did was we invested our $1,234. Our partner in DC brought $10,000. Another partner, MCCD, brought $10,000. $21,234 helped her to for handicap access to bathroom and exit door, and she secured license. In 2014, she said, I want to buy a building. When she said, when you will learn, her revenue grew double digit. We jumped. It was opportunity for us. And then we helped her to purchase the building. This year, 2021, we helped her to buy another building in St. Paul. That is the issue we need to solve in our community. In 2015, Dr. Corey published that research, nearly 67% of African immigrants don't have access to loan fund. And we said, as organization, what can we do? We need to do something about it. In 2016, we campaigned to build our loan fund. December 16, 2016, I remember it's snow blur, and we raised the fund to jumpstart our loan fund. In 2018, we got our CDFI certification. And today I'm, pleased to say that, we have an aggregate of a loan fund, $2.5 million in loan fund. The default rate is it's under 2%. And why is we have the default rate is small percentage? Because the relationship that we build with our businesses, we provide cultural specific technical assistance. So the businesses, when they have issue, they come to us so we can solve it early on. That is why you see that the default rate is extremely low. I hope I answered your question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair Zhang. If we set these up, or when we set these up correctly, they can be very, very successful, because the individuals borrowing the money are paying it right back into these funds, and they can be accessed by the next business, right? And they can use this capital, if you will, to secure additional monies from the traditional lending institution, the various banks. So again, if or when we do this correctly, this can have just this ongoing snowball effect, if you will, and to help more and more people. So it's exciting to hear the number of folks that are involved in this. And again, I just, like I said, we set this up correctly, as I see that you're doing. This can help a tremendous amount of people and have great, great benefits for the state of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair.
I'm sorry, Mr. Washington is here.
I think in the interest of time, I'll give him a quick, brief, testimony. Mr. Washington, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, my name is V. Washington, and I run Van Lisch Lemonade. I've worked with the ADS now. I took the course through them to teach me the business, like the whole aspect of the business in general. Took the whole course, I think it was like 2-week course or so, just in general. And now, since the business has taken off to the point where I definitely need to get some type of funding, I have noticed like it's been very hard across the board, not just through them, but in multiple areas itself. But I mean, they've been working diligently as far as to help me, as far as even like different like how do I explain it, different avenues for me to try to get the funding. But funding has been hard to be able to get within business in general. But I mean, it seems like they're really putting an effort to try to see if we can build this business. And basically with the lemonade business in general, it's been growing to the point where I can't even keep up with demand. And I'm at the standstill now, especially with the idea of how supplies have been very, very, very low. Supply chain across the board. And I'm just a little, small business trying to grow. And it's hard to compete with, I guess, the bigger businesses that have been around forever. So just the funding has been a really tough thing for me to be able to obtain, be able to grow this business and be able to hire people and teach them, especially people that look like myself as well, who have never been in this space, in the CPG space. And this is new got me in this business is something I've been able to grow within the last 4 years just solely off my own income. But now to the point where I can't even hire a team without some type of funding and be able to grow the business further without some type of funding to be able to get to that level.
I see Lead Hamilton. Do you have any question for Mr. Washington?
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I forgot to put my hand down.
No worries. I think sometimes it's good to hear from entrepreneurs who tell us about the work that we do has been fruitful. So thank you so much, Mr. Washington. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, Vice Chair Zhong, did you want to close us on this bill?
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I also want to thank, to express my gratitude to Mr. Gelguru, his testifiers, and the African American community for the contributions to our economic growth here in Minnesota. We know that our immigrant entrepreneurs, small business owners, are critical to our current and the future of our small business ecosystem here. And so it's my hope that we can invest and support this ask, Mr. Chair, and I will renew my motion that House File 3236 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Vice Chair Jay Zhong renews his motion, House File 3236 be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, members, we have a busy schedule on Wednesday for hearing, informational hearing on any of the capital investment. I don't know if any member has got a question. Otherwise, Lead Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, I have two quick questions. I know we're running out of time. Mr. Chairman, I see we have a full schedule on Wednesday. The one thing that I want to just have you consider is there's nobody from the party in which I serve is on the agenda, none of their bills. I know one of our members from our team has a bill that's been introduced. I would hope that we'd be able to hear those bills as well, Mr. Chairman. I believe Representative Juergens has a bill that has been assigned to your committee. So I just ask for that our bills from my team are heard as well, Mr. Chair. And
so go ahead.
I'll go. Oh, the second thing, moving off of that, but second topic, we have 14 days left, Mr. Chairman, to address the UI deficit. 14 days before a major tax increase kicks in on small businesses and our immigrant communities, et cetera, all these businesses, which means we only have about six floor sessions left to get a bill passed, get it into through conference committee, and repassed and sent to the governor, Mr. Chairman. Can you give us an idea of where we're at, how the negotiations are going to move this UI bill before the March 15th deadline?
Thank you for raising those questions. So starting with the last question, yes, the bill is proceeding. We're still looking for the best option and pathways. As you know, the Senate didn't give me their companion bill. This will have been much quicker. As you understand, when you've got a companion bill, we could have been amending that and negotiating that. So now we have to, you know, make sure that the bill is ready and to go to the floor and the conversation that we'll need to go on. So I can assure you, yes, we'll have this conversation, and yes, we'll be coming to the table and making sure that there's a bill sent to the governor. That all depends on the conference that is going to be moving quick. On the first question, as always, this committee is open to hear any bills. Any bills, as you're aware of, we've got many bills that have been requested. Anyone who sends in a request, we're going to accept that. In fact, before the scheduling of the bills, most of the members have been asked to let us know which bills they have, and we have adopted all the bills that came before us. And if there are any additional, we have time. We have time to hear any bills from the Republican House members, and we look forward to having that conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion, members? I see none. We don't have any other items before us. We are now adjourned. Thank you so much.